You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show, fresh off of CES. And yet, the biggest bombs are dropping with the government still shut down. Welcome to the show. My name is Paul.
My name is Rob. And yes, welcome to the show. Glad to have you with us. Hope you're having a great day. Hope you're having the kind of weather we are, because it's beautiful outside right now.
I need to get outside, because we've actually, in New Mexico, where it's typically bright and sunny in the winter, the Farmer's Almanac correctly predicted pretty much systemic rain. Snow and rain the whole winter.
Yeah, snow and rain. It's been that way for 2-3 weeks anyways.
I would say 4 or 5. It's just been like storm after storm after storm after storm.
Yeah, but we're loving it. We're not complaining at all.
It has made for some beautiful panoramas of the sandias. I've got to catch them with the snow, and it's just like, it's like this glow that it's just unreal. If you haven't seen it, I post them in the Drone U community, so check them out there. But quick recap, I did my CES podcast and I edited that podcast. I want to get it out sooner rather than later, which may not always be the best. But I saw some other YouTube videos out there, Rob, and people were just saying, kind of seems like I could see everything in one day and that there was kind of lackluster showing here. And I think that unless you are really in tune with the industry, you have a finger on the pulse of the industry, it definitely looked like that from the outside. But I have to say that there were major manufacturers making significant maturity plays that were really not available as far as information-wise, unless you have deep industry contacts, you know? And I think this year, CES showed me that everyone is like, we're not going to show you what we're actually coming out with this year, because DJI over there will just come over here, walk over here, copy us, do it before we do it, and then boom. Right? Hmm. So I know of two drones from two separate makers that really excite me as far as commercial operations are concerned. And I think we saw a big pivot this year away from consumer drones and more of like drones that are made to complete specific missions. Although I will say, I'm going to be coming out with a video here. Maybe we'll do a podcast on it, Rob, but I'm going to be coming out with a video here on the Mavic 2 Enterprise. It has become my new favorite drone. It's not a Phantom, but it's one of my new favorite drones. With the light and the speaker, you can do so much in production. It's so, like, they're like, it's not a cinema drone. Don't use it for cinema. I'm using it for cinema, DJI.
Apparently, Trump is not up for this drone.
Well, last night I was watching Trevor Noah, and instead of drunk history, they did Trump history.
Oh, gosh.
It was amazing. But we're not here to talk about politics.
No, not at all.
What we're here to talk about is the state of the industry. And I think you're seeing a huge, major pivot to drones for very specific commercial purposes. And with the new NPRM that just came out this week as the government was shut down, I'm wondering now, the FAA was supposed to release this, but Brendan Schulman is the one who posted it in the UAV group. And I'm wondering, how that all went down with the government shutdown, how it affected it. Doesn't really matter because
it was draft, right? It's a draft.
Yes, it was a draft rule. It is a national proposed rulemaking. But they've also come out with something new, which is the advanced national proposed rulemaking for security concerns. And in this NPRM, the FAA has officially launched what they're calling are the new rules to 107, which includes flight over people, which includes nighttime waivers, or should I say no longer waivers, and also some changes to the testing, which I haven't really seen any. I haven't really seen anyone take a look at it.
Well, that kind of came out of left field, I think, didn't it? A little for the majority of folks.
I think it did come out of left field. So what are we talking about here? The FAA is actually, they're going to be updating the recurrency exam. And what they're doing in that update is they're saying, well, instead of doing the recurrency exam, we're going to do a recurrent training, because we can provide better, kind of more personalized, well, we need to know pilots need to work on this, they need to work on that. They can kind of focus on that. They can change things more easily. And the data collection requirements for federal testing centers seems to be quite a financial burden for those people. And they're trying to inhibit that or, eliminate it. That being said, they are saying that they're going to be coming up with online recurrent training. So it should be very interesting. In addition, if you are a Part 61 pilot, it looks like the PowerPoint is going away. The FAA realized that, well, geriatrics need to be held to the same standard as everyone else. So they made that change.
Explain.
Well, with Part 61, if you're an existing pilot, you have a rating for light sport aircraft or a Cessna or a commercial rating or anything. Essentially, all you need to fly drones is to take the online PowerPoint offered by the FAA. Once you pass it with 100%, then you're good to go. And you have now your little certificate that says, well, I can fly drones too. But very specifically in the NPRM, the FAA said that while conditions may be similar in flight, that the conditions that weather may have on a wing for an aircraft is very different than the weather of the quote unquote wing, which is all four blades on a quad, of a drone, and that the effects are vastly different, and that manned pilots need to actually understand drones. I'm like, is this, where's my applause, Rob? I'm like, this is my drum roll. This is like my aha moment.
This is all of it.
The FAA is like, Paul,
we'll have it edited in.
You're correct. It needs to be the right standards for everyone. Yeah. Yeah.
So Trump works for the FAA now, too.
Hey, he works for money.
He gets.
Should probably come up with something more fun, like Eddie Murphy.
There you
know?
Go.
Beverly Hills Cop.
Hey, that'll be good.
So, all right.
Anyways.
Today, we're talking about the NPRM. Because the FAA, you know, with the reauthorization really solidified the value of Part 107, and they have doubled down on the value of Part 107 in a couple of key different ways. By the way, if you have a Part 107 license or you've been thinking about getting one, you should get one before this becomes implemented because the training and testing requirements will be different if you are already grandfathered in as an existing Part 107 holder. Essentially, as an existing Part 107 holder, and if you have a nighttime waiver, you will not have to attend the training that the FAA will be giving to all new 107 pilots who wish to fly at night. So, Rob.
Yes, sir.
Do you like flying at night?
Never done it.
Me neither.
But
and I have
like
a nighttime
to.
Waiver. Well, yeah. I did fly once. I did the light painting course.
That's right. There you go.
And actually, maybe I did it twice.
I think it'd be pretty cool, though. Be fun.
It is pretty cool.
You can do some neat stuff.
It is very cool. I really like the long exposures. You can do some neat stuff. But frankly, I don't really do it too much. I know that other people do it often. And just because we don't do it doesn't mean it's not that important for other people, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to dig it.
So the FAA is changing night waivers. They're going away, Rob. They're done.
So replaced by?
They are going to be replaced by, well, let me just read this. So, in fact, I actually want to go back to the document because there was something in here that I just cherished wholeheartedly, and it was talking about the number of night waivers that essentially have been given. And I know how many drone U nighttime waivers have been approved, and we represent more than 50% of this number, which is really badass, like super badass.
I'm just happy to help.
We are happy to help. As of December 31st, 2017, the agency received 4,837 requests for waivers to operate at night. 1,233 were granted and 2,256 were disapproved. The vast majority of those that were disapproved were because the waiver request lacked necessary information.
So they just weren't thorough.
Yeah.
They weren't completed well.
I think that also says something. But let's
They didn't use our system.
I don't think so.
Most likely.
But again, that was a December 31st, 2017. So there's a whole other year of data
there. A lot's
there.
Happened from there, true.
So the FAA says, with nighttime operations, in evaluating the waiver request, the FAA considered the most critical factors to ensuring safety during night operations to be anti-collision lighting and operator knowledge. Accordingly, the FAA proposes to allow routine, small UAS operations at night under two conditions. First, the operator would complete knowledge testing or training, including new subject matter areas related to operating at night. The second condition would be that the small UAS has an anti-collision light illuminated and visible for at least 3 statute miles. So, really interesting here that it's kind of like, all right, we're doing away with the waiver system here, and we're going to let everyone fly at night as long as you complete this training. Very interesting.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's going to be a training that can be done via the FAA site, Drone Zone or something, or if you're going to have to go to a testing center for that training as well. Because it doesn't get into that, does it?
It does not get into that. In fact, there are new standards, it looks like, for trainings, and it's not really clear what they're looking for.
Know. Perhaps we'll offer it via Drone U.
Yeah.
We'll see what
I'm
happens.
Really hoping so.
Yeah.
I don't see why not. I mean, as being a trusted source for information.
Sure.
Okay, so let's see. So essentially the FAA is saying that the current FAA regulations do not permit small UAS operations at night. And night operation is defined as operation conducted between the end of evening civil twilight and the beginning of morning civil twilight. Part 107 permits operators to request a waiver from these provisions. So requests to operate at night are by far the most common type of waiver request the FAA receives. And to date, the FAA has not received any reports of small UAS accidents operating at night.
I think that's interesting. And I think one of the reasons for that is because the people that are going through the trouble, if I can call it that, of getting the waiver, they're generally going to be responsible people who are going to fly the way they should fly in the first place, right?
True.
And so they're going to avoid accidents, and they're going to avoid getting themselves in situations that would cause issues, as opposed to sort of a rogue pilot who's going to go fly near an airport, for example. So it actually makes sense.
It does make sense. You know what's beautiful about this too? No accidents, so we're going to allow a little more freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, it's logical.
Gosh, I love logic. My favorite thing in third,
yeah,
through sixth grade.
It's definitely progress, and it's encouraging.
Logic games, I'm just saying. It is massive progress. I'm just sitting here like, wow, this is so cool. Okay, so let's talk about the other bombshell news today, because it's huge. Flight over people, right? Currently, you can't really fly over people. And a year ago, almost a year ago, Vic and I sat in front of a lonely table at the Hampton Inn in downtown Denver and did a podcast on what the proposed requirements to fly over people would be. And boy, were we right.
Really? Nailed it.
Mostly right.
Nailed it.
I'm like, wow, our sources are amazing.
And that's a waiver that there were very few, right, that were issued. I mean, just probably less than 10.
I think it was less than 3 or 5 at the time. And one of them was CNN. And their solutions were garbage, if you ask me. But so let's talk about this really quick. Okay, flight over people. Are you going to be able to do it? Yes, you are. But there are going to be 3 different categories. There are going to be operator requirements for just one of those categories, but you could have a drone right now or in the future that operates to comply with category 1 and 2. Do you remember, Rob, a long time ago, we said, well, in order to fly over people, you're most likely going to need prop cages.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. Or the propellers could be designed to essentially break if they were to ever hit something to lacerate skin.
Interesting.
So think about this, right? Whenever you're flying a drone and you've seen crashes, right? And you know how the motors now automatically stop? It's like motor stall and it just stops all the motors. I wonder if that's a safety feature that can comply for eliminating the laceration of skin. But let's get into the nitty gritty. I know you guys are so excited like me. And yes, I have had way too much espresso to ensure that the delivery of this information is good and specific.
And so, energetic.
And energetic, Rob. That's right. By the way, if you guys didn't see our little bit from CES 2019 in the Sony booth, where I say back to you, Bob. Yeah, I'm talking about this shiny guy over here. So if you haven't seen it, check out our Instagram page. It is on our feed, not our story. So, flight over people. The rule proposes to allow routine operations over people without a waiver or exemption under certain conditions. The applicable conditions vary dependent on the level of risk the small UAS operations present to people on the ground. The FAA proposes 3 categories of permissible operations over people based on the risk of injury they present. Remember, we talked about force calculations. We talked about what Virginia Tech had put out there. We talked about how grateful we were that the Virginia Tech pilots were awful, because they hit things so slowly. Their aim was really, really bad, which we proved at the NTSB training that we're grateful that myself and Josh weren't flying. As the speed for collision evidence was about double what Virginia Tech did. All right. Category one, flight over people operations. The FAA determined that small unmanned aircraft weighing less than 0.55 pounds pose a low risk of injury when operating over people. Accordingly, category one is simple and straightforward. Operators would be able to fly small unmanned aircraft weighing 0.55 pounds or less directly over people. While these operations would be subject to all the existing requirements governing small UAS operations in Part 107, the FAA does not propose any additional restrictions as a condition of flying over people.
Wow.
So very soon we may be able to fly a Spark, a DJI Spark or similar. The Tello would work, but the camera sucks on the Tello. It's funny, John Elliott, who is a DroneU member, probably should be DroneU Elite because he's so helpful in the community. But John Elliott, he goes, you know, if they were to shave 50 grams off of the Spark, he's like, boom. Mm-hmm. He's like, that works. So
what does the Air weigh?
The Mavic Air is a little bit heavier.
It is.
It is a little bit heavier. Gotcha. In fact, let me just actually.
But I can fly my Sima over people.
True.
Just kidding.
True, you can. You can. Yeah, the Mavic Air would most likely qualify under category two. But
okay.
Most importantly, this is really cool because you're going to be able to fly over people and it's not going to be a stigma, which makes sense because helicopters fly super low over people all the time and they never think, oh my God, I wonder if that drone's going to fall out of the sky and chop my head off.
It's true.
That typically never happens. So luckily the FAA is putting us in the same category.
Well, and obviously that's a function of history, right? I mean, we've seen thousands and thousands and thousands of flights without significant injury to the people that were underneath that particular bird. So
that is true.
That makes sense. I mean, it's actually, again, coming back to the logic behind a lot of this, it makes sense that they've kind of taken their time. They're listening, but they're not rushing, and they're making the appropriate changes at the appropriate times, it seems. And so patience pays off sometimes.
Patience is profit.
Wow.
It really is. Well, think about it, right? If you're in sales, sorry to go off here. If you're in sales mm-hmm. and you act desperate or needy, you're not getting the sale.
Mm-mm.
So if you're patient and you're like, I kind of need the sale. I kind of don't, whatever. I would like to help you and be of service to you. And if I can't, well, no big deal.
Yeah, maybe I'm not the right one for you.
I should work with that guy.
Absolutely.
Patience is profit. All right.
Anywho.
Second, you want to read the second category there, Rob? Because this is pretty
exciting.
Yeah, sure.
The FAA proposes that the unmanned aircraft would not have exposed rotating parts that could lacerate human skin. So they're the guards, right?
The prop guards.
There are,
or prop cages, maybe not even cages. Prop guards.
Difference is?
Cages encompass the whole, like, so it goes on top and on bottom. Prop guards are just like a guard around the rotating edge.
Which is preferred? Preferred.
I'm sure it's cages. If I remember our old podcast, we specifically mentioned cages over guards.
Right. Okay. So, but from your perspective, cages would be preferred.
Yeah.
If you're flying a gig or something over people.
Oh, well, aerodynamically, controllability, no, I don't want a cage. I'd rather have the guard.
Right.
In fact, I don't really want either because they negatively affect flight.
Of course.
And
right.
I don't think that the FAA is even considering that whatsoever.
Yeah.
But it does completely change the dynamic of flight.
Sure.
That being said, I think cages are going to be, I think you're going to see drones coming out with DJI this summer with prop cages on them.
Mm-hmm.
There's my prediction. You heard it here first.
Well, this is interesting. If we read on, there are a number of ways a manufacturer could design small unmanned aircraft to comply with this requirement. For example, a manufacturer could design a shroud to protect skin from laceration upon impact, or it could design blades that do not lacerate upon impact. So what they're saying there is it's not necessarily in the end going to have to be a guard or a cage.
Mm-hmm.
There could be other technology that's used to accomplish this. Which is interesting.
It is interesting. And I'll say, thinking of this, I'm thinking of the Mavic 2 props because they're like Southwest wings, right? They have that winglet at the end, mm-hmm. kind of quiets them down. It also helps, you know, disrupt the wash off the prop itself. And the other day I was pulling it out and I had noticed one of the props had cracked and broken off. The tip is actually gone. Right?
Whoops.
And it was still flying just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I wonder if these props are made to break really easily because I have never replaced the propellers on the Mavic 2 Pro, or excuse me, the Mavic Pro, the
Mavic
first
Pro.
One,
right.
Or the Mavic Air, which you're still flying,
yeah.
right? And we tell everyone every 10 hours, you've definitely gone over that now.
Oops.
So, I mean, just makes me wonder about how much is going into the design of the, you know, the drones themselves, which is interesting because there is this kind of manufacturer variable here. I mean, there are, before Category 2 small unmanned aircraft could be used for to fly over people, the manufacturer would be required to demonstrate to the FAA satisfaction that the aircraft met 13 injury threshold requirements.
Hmm.
So it looks like now aircraft are going to have to be certified almost, which is kind of different than what we're seeing.
It's almost like a vehicle, right? For crash test certifications, if we can call it that.
Yeah.
Or at least crash testing.
So the third part of Section 2 is that no small UAS could be operated over people if it has an FAA-identified safety defect. For Category 2, a safety defect would be any material component or feature that presents more than a low probability of causing a casualty when operating over people. I mean, that could be as simple as you have too many blades of grass on your props and they could become unbalanced and they'll fall off and you'll crash.
Yeah, and I guess safety first. If there's any indication of anything like that, then adjust, right?
True, true. For this proposal, the FAA defines a casual to be serious injury, which corresponds to a level 3 injury on the abbreviated injury scale. I looked up the abbreviated injury scale. That means you have an 8 to 10% chance of death. But the way that I understand it to be in the FAR AIM, I don't know where my FAR AIM book is around here. It was over there. Anyway, the way that I remember it is it's an overnight stay in the hospital.
Hmm.
So.
Which now you're talking about a function of the overall health of the person, right? Because if something happens to me,
and you're eating
like
a bunch
say,
of
relatively healthy versus someone else who may be less healthy.
Who's eating all the ho-hos.
Whatever.
Little chocolate donuts.
Or maybe I'm the unhealthy one. And I spend the night and someone who's more healthy doesn't have to. Anyways, there are a lot of questions. Like any time we have this kind of stuff, there's going to be a lot of questions about the ultimate dissolution of any of it.
True. The manufacturer requirements, though, are really interesting because we've gone from no manufacturer requirements to manufacturer requirements. So that's interesting. Category 3, the FAA proposes a final category of operations, Category 3, that allows for a higher injury threshold than Category 2. But that limits an individual's exposure to the risk of injury through operational limitations. So it looks like the first part would require small unmanned aircraft to be designed upon impact with a person, not to result in an injury as severe as the injury that would result from a transfer of 25 foot-pounds of kinetic energy from a rigid object. The higher injury threshold means that operators could take into account different weight, speed, altitude, material, and technology factors when choosing a mission-appropriate small UAS. For example, the unmanned aircraft could be faster and heavier, designed to fly higher, made for different materials, or use different technology. The second part would be identical to Category 2. The unmanned aircraft would not have exposed rotating parts that could lacerate human skin.
Hmm.
Now, for the third part, as with Category 2 and Category 3, no small UAS could be operated over people if it has an FAA-identified safety defect. Category 3, though, is distinct, Rob, because the safety defect could be one that presents more than a low probability of causing a fatality when operating over people. Here's the kicker. This is going to be how you are separated as a high-income earner drone pilot and a low-income earner pilot. It's right here. Category 3 is the only category that has an operational requirement. Because of the higher injury threshold, there would be an increased risk of injury to people on the ground. To manage this increased risk, Category 3 operations would include three operational limitations not applicable to the other categories of operations. First, the proposal would prohibit operations over any open air assembly of people. Second, the operators would have to be within or over a closed or restricted access site, and anyone within that site would have to be notified that a small unmanned aircraft may fly over them. Third, for operations not within or over a closed or restricted access site, the small unmanned aircraft may transit but not hover over people.
Hmm. A lot of idiosyncrasies in all this.
Yes, it's definitely safety-based, though. And it's interesting because in the very beginning of the NPRM, they very specifically said, it's really important that everyone understands this is not technology-specific. This is safety-specific.
Meaning the understanding of the people that you're flying over? Because between the second category and the third, or category two and category three, what is the difference between the drones that you can fly? Is that a distinction that's being made?
It's a distinction being made by the force that they would have on impact. So one of them is 25 pounds versus 11 pounds.
But that could also be just a function of speed.
It could, which in the NPRM, they talked about how one particular SUAS could essentially be good for category two or three operations. Oh, here it is. The FAA proposes an additional flexibility that would allow for a small UAS to be qualified for both Cat 2 and Cat 3 operations, as long as there are safeguards that prevent the remote pilot from inadvertently switching between two modes of operation. For example, the small UAS could have a software that limits speed or altitude that makes it eligible for Cat 2, but have different settings for Cat 3. So it sounds
like... Kitty Hawk.
Hello. Yeah, seriously, there's huge value there.
This is a Kitty Hawk problem here.
Yeah. Whoa. That was deep, Rob.
Interesting. That's good stuff.
Wow. That was very nuanced. Like, that's a very, very good point, because this is what they are focusing on.
Mm-hmm.
So can you use your existing drones for this? Well, the FAA recognizes that a great number of small UAS are available in the marketplace and are currently in use. Accordingly, the FAA proposes to allow any manufacturer or operator to test its small UAS and submit evidence that it's eligible to operate over people using the proposed means of compliance and declaration of compliance processes described above. Now, here's the thing that I've noticed. One of the provisions that they put in the NPRM that I didn't write in the note sheet is that if you, let's say we bought a Mavic Pro, okay? We are not a manufacturer. Let's say we buy a Mavic Pro and we hack our Mavic Pro and we add a light to it. Guess what? Now, in the eyes of the FAA, we are a manufacturer. And now we must send in that drone or the specs or the changes that we did into the FAA to now have it approved and certified that it can be flown. So if you have a modified drone, it's going to be a lot harder to get it approved for flight over people.
This is interesting, though. I mean, it does say the FAA proposes to allow any manufacturer or operator to test its small UAS and submit evidence. So we could take any drone that we have and test it as an operator and submit that evidence to the FAA. And then I wonder if they would take that evidence that we submitted and blanket it to anybody else using that drone.
True.
I mean, that's interesting. I think that could potentially be a very efficient way to make existing drones flyable, right? If there are people out there willing to do that.
Yeah, I just wonder, what is the system in place to do this?
Yeah, and what kind of data are they looking for?
And how much time will it take?
And we got to measure the 25 pounds versus the 11 pounds, and there's just all kinds of stuff to go on in that. But may or may not be in our wheelhouse. Couldn't put it in our wheelhouse, but we may not want to.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, okay. Very interesting.
So the FAA also, they also threw this in there. FAA clarifying enforcement. Now, this is really interesting because in the reauthorization, there were some changes and provisions made to this, and they mention it. If an operator is unwilling or unable to comply with or is deliberately flouting regulations, the FAA would imply enforcement action. The FAA has a number of enforcement tools available, including warning notices, gotten about 30 of those, but that was before Part 107. Letters of correction, I got one of those. Civil penalties and certificate actions to address violations and help deter future violations. Remember, the FAA is a compliance philosophy organization. What does that mean? That means if Rob decides to screw up and fly 22 miles one way in a brand new Mavic 2 Pro while he's driving the car and doesn't realize that you can't be driving and or operating a moving vehicle and flying from it at the same time, the FAA would probably go, "Hey, Rob, you're an idiot. You can't do that." And we're going to have a conversation. That's when the pilot bill of rights kicks in, and you can say, "Well, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to answer any of your questions. Thank you very much. Goodbye." Or you can say, "I will never do that again. I'm really sorry." And that's the secret to them leaving. Now, if you genuinely mean that and you don't mess up again, you probably will never have another problem with the FAA, and you'll have an opportunity to build a great relationship with your local FISDO guys and potentially open the door to many operations that you never could have thought possible. Life is all about making a decision on whether you are going to utilize an event as an opportunity or as a liability, and it is always up to you. That being said, the FAA says civil penalties for violation of the federal aviation regulations range from a maximum per violation penalty of $1,437 per violation for individual operators to $32,666 per violation for larger companies.
Isn't that interesting that it's not a round number? I mean, it kind of makes me think of Never Split the Difference, right? That
yes.
It's more meaningful.
Yes. I'm so glad you brought that up.
That's really interesting.
It's very specific.
The psychology of that.
Dude, every government agency is implementing massive psychological tactics at every point.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another perfect, seemingly blatant example of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very,
interesting.
Very specific number, right? I just saw some guy just got roasted in the commercial SUAS group for writing an article about how realtors can face an $11,000 fine. And he's right. You know, it's only happened once, and it was $9,000, not 11. But people just went in there and roasted him. And it's like, guys, you're wrong. Like, even though you're a majority here, the majority of you are wrong. Like, and it was really interesting to watch how that dynamic has kind of switched in the groups. Once again, just super grateful for the people that are in our group. Anyway, in addition, Congress granted the FAA the authority to levy civil penalties of up to $20,000. This is new.
That's
for interfering with law enforcement, first responders, or wildfire operations. The FAA may take enforcement action against anyone who conducts an unauthorized UAS operation or operates a UAS in a way that endangers the safety of the national airspace system. This authority is designed to protect users of the airspace as well as people and property on the ground. So I think they're kind of taking more stance here. And the thing is that the FAA has also more recently, you know, come out and doing, what is it called? Ramp checks. So for example, during the FAA shutdown, remember the Rose Bowl?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know who was flying the Rose Bowl?
Mm-mm.
My buddy, Trent Siggard.
Real? Oh yeah, I did hear you say that. Yeah.
And you know what happened to him? Ramp checked.
No kidding.
Uh-huh. And you know what happened to him then? Nothing. Because he was in good shape.
He was legit.
So, yeah. Good job,
what did they check?
Registration. They wanted to see if the registration number was on the drone. They wanted to make sure he had his 107 certificate on him, all applicable permissions. It's just, you got to have your paperwork on you.
Wow. I wonder if that was just an FAA guy who was going to the game. He's like, hey, there's a dude that stopped by and on his way into the stadium, check him out.
He said the Rose Bowl parade. It was the Rose Bowl
parade. Either way.
Yeah.
Either way. Interesting.
Actually, his flight was not about providing aerials. It was about counterintelligence security provisions. And then he was like, but I got this really cool picture and I went down to the editing booth and they aired it. I was
nice.
Like, I saw it. Because I saw
Good
that drone
him.
Shot and I was like, wait a minute. I know that horizon line. Anyway, back to it, the NPRM and enforcements. I think the FAA is definitely going to be ramping up enforcements also with the reauthorization that just happened. You know, really empowers Part 107 holders and kind of limits hobbyist operators, kind of how, more so how model aircraft were before the days of drones.
Yeah.
Where people flew mostly at fields and whatnot.
Interesting.
So,
what's the timeline on this? Because I know there's a comment period, right?
There is typically a 60-day comment period where everyone can go on and comment on it, but I don't think this is in the Federal Register yet, as we're still in a government shutdown.
True. There's nobody there to put it on the register.
Yes, that is correct. That is correct.
Interesting.
So,
very cool. And what about the training elements? Because isn't there something in there about training?
There is something in there about training. Thank you. Here we go. Those remote pilots who hold a remote pilot certificate with a small UAS rating who completed initial knowledge testing prior to this rule becoming final would not have been tested or initially trained on operations at night. Recurrent training, which a remote pilot can complete online, presents a less costly option and will achieve a level of assurance of knowledge that is comparable to the assurance of recurrent test provides. So goodbye recency tests in person. $150 just one time. Gotta love that.
Nice.
Got to love that. I have to say, though, I really want to check to see if this is in the Federal Register, because if I understand correctly, this was posted by, yep, it's right there. This was posted by Brendan Schulman. Only got, that's interesting that there's only 17 comments on this. So, oh, last I wanted to mention was there is an advance notice of proposed rulemaking on this, and that is all about the security and how security is going to interact and law enforcement will interact with this. So, very interesting. Also, it looks like remote ID is going to become extremely prominent. I don't think it's in the register. If I remember correctly, at the very top of this document, let's see, this is a draft document. We are not seeking or accepting comments. This posting is only to provide information about what will soon be published in the Federal Register. Department of Transportation, Office of the Secretary, Federal Aviation Administration. Docket notice, notice number, blank.
So if you don't have your 107 yet, get into our studies and get it done.
Yep.
Into our study materials, I should say.
Wow. Does that add more value or what? What a bombshell. Well, guys, guys and girls, thank you for listening. This is very promising. I'm really interested to see how this training is going to play out. If it plays out like the AUVSI TOPS program, then we're definitely screwed. If it plays out like some of the other programs that are in other countries for educational training and technical training, I think it could be great. I'd love to see us be a part of it in one way or another, and I would love there to be an open opportunity for everyone who's in the training community, or at least who's in the training community and trains more than 100 pilots per month, would have an opportunity to work with the FAA. So, I mean, I hope that we are a part of getting the word out for the FAA. So,
absolutely.
Anyway.
We'd love to do that.
But guys, if you have a question about this or other topics, then you got to be like our friend Ken from New Jersey and just post your questions. Go to askadroneyou.com. And Ken, thank you so much for all those questions, even your futuristic crazy ones that probably won't end up on the show. yes, we
they
listen to
They are fun to listen to, though.
Yes, they sure are. But anyway, guys, that is going to do it for us today. Please leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Overcast, or wherever you download the show. That's going to do it for us today. The next big question, will the FAA symposium actually go down? We're kind of hoping so, because we have plans to be there, and it would really suck if it didn't happen. So
yeah, there'd probably be a lot more discussion about this, so it'd be good to be there for that.
No doubt. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us today. My name is Paul.
My name is Rob.
This is Ask Drone You.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.